Jonga Kandemiri, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, August 4th, 2016. We'd like to thank you for joining us this evening live from Washington. I'm Demyake Mwakalielie. Here are our top stories this evening. Zimbabweans living in neighboring nations are planning to shut down border posts to press government to reverse ban on some imports.
We are going to be protesting at all borders across around Zimbabwe to try and send a clear message to the government about the way they are treating the people through the introduction of Statutory 64 of 2016.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission has been urged to engage the police and national army on human rights violations. Some Zimbabweans are awarded lucrative grants under the Mandela Washington Fellowship. And much more coming up. Stay tuned. Zimbabweans living outside the country working in conjunction with Pastor Evans Mawarire's This Flag and Tajamuka campaign are planning to shut down all border posts starting on August 8th to protest against the government's move to block the importation of some basic commodities under Statutory Instrument 64 of 2016. One of the coordinators of the protest, Joseph Chanakira of the Citizens of Zimbabwe Movement, based in South Africa, say they will stage the protests in South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique and Tanzania until Zimbabwe reverses the importation ban, which the government says only affects the bulk importation of some basic commodities. Zimbabwe urges that the ban would boost the production of local goods, though most businesses lack capital to revitalize their activities. There was no immediate reaction on this move from state officials in some of these nations and Zimbabwe. Chanakira tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that they have asked combi and cross-border bus operators, business people, civic society organizations, and others to back the protesters.
We are going to be protesting at all borders across around Zimbabwe to try and send a clear message to the government about the way they are treating the people through the introduction of Statutory 64 of 2016.
Who are you working with, you know, in this
protest? We are working with Tajamuka. We are working with the International Cross Borders Association. We are working with the bus operator organizations. We are working with movements of citizens. We are working with the Zimbabwe Exiles Forum. We are working with all interested political parties, which I will not mention at this point in time. Our major demand is that the ZANU-PF government, which is led by Robert Gabriel Mugabe, must consider the, or actually abolish, to use the correct term, through our Statutory Instrument 64 of 2016.
So now, are you engaging the respective governments, you know, in the countries where you want to stage the protests?
Yes, we have done that through the various mechanisms provided by the respective constitutions.
And what are the governments saying about this? And are you getting any other support from civic society organizations?
We are getting new, should I say, intensive or maximum support from civic organizations. We are involving students' movements in the various countries, and they are all responding positively.
How sustainable is this kind of mass protest?
We are going to sustain it. Remember, the borders into Zimbabwe are the most important areas when we look in terms of the economy and the free movement of goods and people. So if we get there and we are able to organize a march and protest and get it to shut down for a day or two, we believe that that will be a matter of sending a clear message, and we are going to sustain it because we have the numbers. The people are coming on board.
Are combi operators and bus operators willing to actually sacrifice their business for that?
They are willing because they are losing the most. Remember, buses would normally have a trailer carrying staff, and they would charge prices for that. And Omalaicha, they do the same thing. They carry staff to Zim. But now all that business is going away due to the instrument.
Is the Zimbabwean government aware of what you're doing?
I'm not really concerned because these protests will not be carried out on Zimbabwean soil.
That was Joseph Chanakira of Citizens of Zimbabwe Movement speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Johannesburg. Some Zimbabweans attending an outreach meeting convened by the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission in Chinoy say the organization should engage the police and Zimbabwe National Army, which are alleged to be the top human rights violators in the country. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa attended the meeting and filed this report.
Speaking at the gathering in Chinoy, local resident Cleopatra Mubumbi said the commission should ensure that these state institutions need to clearly know their limits in handling members of the public.
Commission should educate the police about human rights, because taking my driver's license, keeping it on him, go around my car and demand things like come out of your car, show me your spare wheel, and yet my spare wheel is right at the back of my car because my car is a 4x4. He can see it, but he would like me to take him to the car. That on its own is abuse, is time taking, and I don't think it's proper.
Sentiments were echoed by another local participant, political activist Chendai Musonza, who added that members of the police and the army need basic education in human rights issues.
The most perpetrators of human rights abuse are the uniformed forces, especially the police. So this workshop should have been directed to them first before it came to us.
One of the commissioners, Petuna Chiriseri, told the gathering that they are also worried about police brutality. Chiriseri said the commission has already engaged Police Commissioner General Augustine Chiuri about the beating up of four vets and demonstrators last month by the police.
That is the role of our chairman. He was the first one to pick up the phone to personally engage the Police Commissioner General on the issue. And there are pending meetings concerning that.
Chiriseri said the issue of brutality being perpetrated by uniformed forces has come up in almost all outreach meetings which have been conducted by the commission. He said the commission is in the process of rolling out an outreach program targeted at the uniformed forces, community leaders and students.
But not just to engage civil society and rural district councils, but also civil servants, uniformed forces, state security agents, traditional leaders, religious leaders, political leaders, educational leaders, teachers, lecturers, and students themselves, so that we not only make ourselves accessible, but also so that we can together build a Zimbabwe that is not only united, but that is harmonious, and that can establish peace and stability in our nation.
Mrs. Karukaira Tsauka, Chief Human Rights Officer of the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, said the organization has taken over the work of the ombudsman.
When we took over the public protector role, we took over many cases which the public protector department were looking at. We have cleared a number of them. Some could have prescribed as well. So we have cleared many of the cases to do with the backlog, but we haven't completed the process so far.
Chiriseri urged Zimbabweans not to concentrate only on political rights, but to other rights like rights to food, water, education and health. Some residents questioned the independence of the institution, considering that commissioners are appointed by President Robert Mugabe, whose ZANU-PF party members are accused of allegedly perpetrating violence against opposition activists. Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission, which was created by the new constitution in 2010, has not been functional due to lack of resources. So far, 482 cases of human rights violations have been brought before the commission. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Another infusion of much-needed drought relief is on its way to Zimbabwe from the United States government. $54 million for food assistance, seeds, safe water and livestock support was announced today by the U.S. Agency for International Development. This represents 42% of the total $127 million humanitarian assistance award announced for the entire Southern African region. The 2016 Mandela Washington Fellowship Presidential Summit wrapped up part of this year's program yesterday in Washington, D.C., with President Barack Obama addressing the 1,000 fellows. Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo reports.
The Mandela Washington Fellows were very much excited when President Barack Obama was introduced by Mandela Washington Fellow Emmanuel Odama of Uganda. And almost immediately, they started to sing happy birthday to Mr. Obama, whose 55th birthday is today. President Obama said the Mandela Washington Fellowship was one of the highlights of his legacy. He said the fellows represented the true meaning of a cultural exchange.
And while I'm going to leave it up to historians to decide my overall legacy, one of the things that I'm really proud of is my partnership with young people like you, because all of you inspire me. So years from now, when you're running a big business or doing a great nonprofit, or leading your country as a president or a prime minister or a minister of finance or something, my hope is that you can look back and you will keep drawing from the strength and the experience that you've gotten here. I hope that you'll remember those of us who believed in your potential. And I hope, as a consequence, you then give back to the people who are coming up behind you.
Reacting to holding a town hall with Mr. Obama, Zimbabwean fellow Free Blessing Murawa, a community-based dentist, said the experience had changed his life.
You know, I never thought I would be sitting in the same room with the big man himself, so to speak. But it's just an inspiration to hear him talk about you know, leadership and, you know, how humble he is and how, you know, service-driven he is. You know, that had to serve the people.
Murawa said his experience will boost the work he does back home in rural Zimbabwe. Fellow Tinashe Basa, coordinator of an orphaned day home, Zim Kids Orphan Trust, said this fellowship represented a moment in his life he never expected.
I don't know what to say, and I got the president's handshake as well. I'm so excited. I couldn't believe my eyes that I'm actually seeing the president sitting in the same room. It's amazing.
Basa, who never completed his secondary school, said he will return to Zimbabwe to show children at Zim Kids that anything is possible in life.
Education is the key to success. It's very important. It's not about getting your degrees, but, you know, just getting education, just basic education can get you somewhere.
Nosipo Bebe from Victoria Falls, who is a woman activist, said it was Mr. Obama's statement on dreams that she will carry for the rest of her life.
And that statement says, if your dreams are not scary, then they are not big enough. That statement is going to stay with me for the rest of my life. People, if your dreams do not scare even you, the dreamer, then it means they're not big enough. Often we think inside the box, we're scared to go outside of the box and explore and see our full potential. Everybody was born with potential. It's up to you as a woman, as a man, as a mother, as a father, as a youth member, as a child, to cash from that cash box that you were given.
As the Mandela Washington Fellows return home today, three Zimbabweans, Free Blessing Murawa, Feri Gwata, and Nyasha Marakurwa, will remain in the United States for a 6-week internship, while some other Zimbabweans, including Collins Nyamadzau, Nobukosi Ndlovu, and Kudzai Sakajera, were given grants from United States, USAID, and Citibank for projects in Zimbabwe. 60 Zimbabweans are expected to take part in the same program next year. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Tatenda Gumbo. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Medium Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, we take a closer look at the MDCT's move to amend its constitution to accommodate two vice presidents. But first, a look at regional and international news. Results from South Africa's local polls show opposition parties scoring major gains against the ruling African National Congress Party. With more than half the votes counted, the ANC held a majority of the national vote count, but with its lowest levels of support since the end of apartheid in 1994. Analysts had predicted the ANC would lose support in this year's polls in the wake of corruption scandals and rising public resentment over a lack of basic services. And London police say Thursday that they found no evidence of radicalization to suggest terrorism after a Somali man stabbed a woman to death and wounded five other people in central London. Instead, they say the attack was likely triggered by mental health issues. Police arrested the 19-year-old man in Russell Square near the University of London after incapacitating him with a taser. The man, who has yet to be publicly named, is in police custody at a nearby hospital. The National Council and National Executive of the Movement for Democratic Change Formation of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai have amended the party's constitution in order to accommodate three vice presidents. The appointments have caused a lot of friction in the party, with authoritative sources in the party saying that Vice President Thokozani Kupe is still not happy about the move. They say Kupe believes that she is being sidelined for the presidency in case something happens to Mr. Tsvangirai, who disclosed recently that he has cancer of the colon. Tsvangirai appointed Nelson Chamisa and Elias Mudzuri as his two new vice presidents. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached Obed Gutu, the MDCT spokesperson, and Dewa Mavinga, a human rights lawyer and independent political commentator.
Let me start, Gibbs, by stating that it was not sanitization of the constitution, because if we use the word sanitize, it denotes that it is something that is fundamentally flawed. The fact of the matter is that what was done was actually perfectly within the four corners of the constitution of the MDC, as approved by the inaugural Congress of the MDC, held at Chitungwiza in January 2000, and also as amended and adopted at the second Congress that was held at the City Sports Center in Harare on the 18th of March 2006, and also as amended and adopted at the third Congress of the party at the Baba Field Stadium in the city of Kings, Bulawayo, on April 30, 2011. And more importantly, as amended and adopted at the fourth Congress of the party on November 1, 2014. So as far as some of us are concerned, we are saying that this is now case closed. We should now really move forward. And the main issue that we should be concentrating upon now is to ensure that the ZANU-PF dictatorship, funded by Robert Mugabe, is democratically removed from power, and that we as the MDC take over power.
Now, Mr. Mavinga, do you agree with what Mr. Kutu is saying?
No, I do not agree, Gibbs, because of three reasons. Number one, when President Tsvangirai made the appointment, he said, he wrote, and I quote, he said he had been instructed by the National Council and was therefore acting on those instructions to make the appointment. So I don't understand how the National Council would then endorse its own directive to the president. Number two, it's not clear whether the president had, at that point, had the power to make those appointments. And if he had, why was it then necessary to amend or to align the constitution to that position if it was legally sound from the outset? Number three, even if we are to assume that the National Council or the Congress had given President Tsvangirai all those powers, there is need for caution when you look at democratic parties as opposed or as put in contrast with parties like ZANU-PF. You need to limit the amount of power that can be deposed in one individual. So it must be something that needs a lot of self-introspection by the MDC leadership, whether it wants to go that route where one individual has that kind of power. And finally, Gibbs, where you have a Congress that elects senior officials, and suddenly you have appointments, it becomes problematic and conflictual. You need to have an arrangement or mechanism that looks at the relevant powers of these two or different groups of people, because those that may have been directly elected democratically may question the basis upon which appointees would have the same authority or even higher authority. For example, if you compare the post of the national spokesperson of the party, the secretary general of the party, and appointed VPs who are above all those people. So it brings a bit of discord if it is not properly explained.
Now, Mr. Kutu, Mr. Mavinga is saying that Mr. Tswangirai is becoming another person who looks like President Mugabe in a way. You've been criticizing him for making some unilateral decisions, all those kind of things. And now it has crept to the MDC. How do you then go to the people and say you are still a Democratic Party?
Gibbs, let me just start by saying that it is actually very unfair for anyone to want to compare President Morgan Tsvangirai with President Robert Mugabe. Those two men, gentlemen, are actually cut from two different clubs. Robert Mugabe is, for lack of a better word, a man who has absolutely no respect, not only for the rule of law, but who actually believes in the rule by law. And that is a clear distinction from Morgan Tsvangirai, who is a Democrat, who has consistently pioneered issues to do with good governance, issues to do with democracy, and more importantly, who, if you remember, during his tenure as chairman or chairperson of the National Constitutional Assembly, was actually at the forefront of fighting democratically for the adoption of a new democratic constitution for the Republic of Zimbabwe. So there's actually a fundamental distinction between the two gentlemen.
That was MDCT spokesperson Obed Gutu. You also heard from Dewa Mavinga, a human rights lawyer and independent political commentator. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. An 11-year-old Zimbabwean swimmer and young sports lady, Maka Chikowero, says she was inspired to donate a sports kit to Magaya Secondary School in Murewa after learning of their plight at a United Nations meeting held in New York, at which she was a participant. Maka saved up her allowances to buy a sports kit for a young girl team in Murewa. She tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye that she hopes to continue saving more money so that she can buy more sportswear for other children.
I donated a soccer kit to Zimbabwe because, first off, I'm from Zimbabwe. And when I went to the UN last year, I learned that some girls do not have opportunities that I do here, and I wanted them to have the same thing that I have. So I chose to donate a soccer kit with socks, a shirt, and shorts.
Where did you donate to?
The Gaia Secondary School.
So how did you come about to actually get enough funds to buy the soccer kit?
I saved up my allowances and did chores, and little by little I went to the sports store, something but a pair of socks or shorts, depending on what I needed more of for the kit.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You are an avid swimmer. Tell us about that.
Well, I've been swimming since I was 4, and I'm on 2 swim teams currently, the Goodman Waves for the summer swimming and YDC United for winter.
Who is your inspiration?
Oh, I really like, for swimming, I really like Missy Franklin, the U.S. swimmer, and Kirsty Coventry.
So do you think one day you'll get to the heights of Kirsty Coventry and perhaps swim for Zimbabwe?
Maybe.
And also, you were part of a delegation of young girls that went to the United Nations where they were discussing issues of young girls. Tell us about that.
Well, when I found out that girls couldn't really do sports, it really kind of made me not so happy because, like, I play soccer and swimming, and, like, imagining me without those sports would, like, I wouldn't be really happy. So I wanted other girls to be happy, too.
And what would you urge other young people from Zimbabwe who are in the diaspora to do, also, you know, learning from what you have done over there yourself?
Well, I want them to, like, keep on doing the stuff they love whenever they have time.
And how would you inspire others also who perhaps are thinking of giving something to Zimbabwe? How do you start?
Well, it just starts with one basic idea and you just add on to that.
That was Maka Chikowero speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Wisconsin. Now, Marvelous also spoke with Maka's mother, Lucy Ndongwe Chikowore, who said that she was surprised by Maka's decision to make a donation.
She has been doing sports for a while. And last year, she had an opportunity to go to the UN, and there were sessions. I don't know what sessions she attended with Farigu Manzwanda. Then she came out. And she was so determined to do something for girls who could not do sports for various reasons. One day she just came to us and said, "Mom, can you take me to a sports store?" And we didn't know what she really wanted. And then she started picking up soccer jerseys, and she bought them using her own money. And she said, "I want to give it to some girls so they can do what I do, what I love." So that's how she started putting this thing together.
What lesson do you think other Zimbabweans can learn from what we've seen Maka do?
I think it is just good to think of other people, even if you are in a totally different situation or a setup. Because for Maka, she thought beyond herself. And she really thinks about these other girls and said, you know, I think I can make a difference in some girl's life. And she is kind of self-driven by that.
And why Magaya School in Murewa?
Maka has been working with Miss Nyarazai Gumbanjanda with the Rosaria Trust. So I think she got to learn a little bit more about the girls there.
That was Mrs. Lucy Ndongwe Chikowore, the mother of Maka, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye from Wisconsin. And now to the Olympics, where Germany walloped Zimbabwe's mighty Warriors 6-1 yesterday in a Group F match in the 2016 Olympic Games in Brazil. Zimbabwe's face saver was scored by Kudakwashe Basopo. The mighty Warriors take on Canada in the same group on Saturday. At the same time, Zimbabwe shooting coach Stuart Sylvester is also in Brazil. Here's what he tells Alvaro Adredo of VOA's Portuguese service.
We've got 31 athletes in Rio this year, which is fantastic. We've got a ladies soccer team and then 11 other athletes, individual competitors. I'm representing the shooting as the coach with Mike Nicholson. We just have the one shooter and he's shooting double trap. The competition is on the 10th of August. Mike won the African Championships in November last year. And also shot a qualifying score, which qualified him to shoot in the Olympics, which is, it's a very good achievement. There's only 22 people shooting double trap at the Olympics.
What about the Olympic Village?
We've had a fantastic time. Maybe we've been lucky, but we haven't had any problems. It's been great.
Any message to Zimbabwe people?
Yeah, just thank you all for the support. We've seen so many wonderful support from Zimbabwe, and we'll do our best to bring back a medal. But thank you, guys.
That was Zimbabwe shooting coach Stuart Sylvester speaking with VOA's Alvaro Adredo. And you can also see that video on our website, www.voazimbabwe.com. Now, yesterday's arrival of the Olympic torch in Rio de Janeiro was greeted by protesters angry over a lack of social and economic progress in the shadow of the multi-billion-dollar global sporting event. Now remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when today's hosts of the Women's Forum, Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye and Praxedes Jeremiah, will talk with listeners about the Mandela Washington Fellowship and rising cases of child rape in Zimbabwe. If you wish to join the show, please call 001-202-619-2077. That number again, 001-202-619-2077. And of course, you should also tune on to your Facebook pages so you can catch the show live, where it would be live streaming. Now, before we go, a quick recap of our top stories. Zimbabweans living in neighboring nations are planning to shut down border posts to press government to reverse ban on some imports. And that's our show this evening. Thank you for tuning in. Please stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamile Nkomo. I'm Dimyake Mwakalielie here in Washington, wishing you a very good night.